Just want to welcome Tiens Jacobs. He is pastor and regional leader for the Cape Town churches. For those of you who know Tiens, know that he, first of all, he's very well known for his great presentations, and secondly, for his great academic skill and just the passion that he has for the lost, and then for his jokes as well. So Tiens, he was a student here. He met his wife while being a cell leader. Great. So become a cell leader. Let's just welcome him. Thanks, Tiens.
Thanks, Haas. By the way, when the church was planted in 1999, things were very rough. We were not very organized. So they actually made me the small group leader of a ladies' small group. And I accepted the challenge because I'm a man of faith. And the joke of it is when I walked into the small group, my wife-to-be actually walked out. But don't worry, I overcame. All right, can you just go to the next slide there? Can you? All righty. Okay, so we continue talking about garden sex. And tonight we, as you obviously gathered a bit, we're going to talk a bit about pornography. Now, just relax, breathe. Life is good. We're just going to talk through a lot of stuff. And I think it's important to be informed about these sort of things. Most of the times when we have a talk about pornography, it's a very emotional type of talk or a very emotional topic. I don't think there's anyone that truly has no emotional stance when it comes to pornography. Either you hear a word like pornography and the connotation that you have with it is like, disgust, perhaps. Perhaps for somebody it's a connotation of shame. I really struggle with it, or it's something that's hit quite close at home, maybe a family member, maybe somebody close to me. But for no one, it's a truly, truly neutral sort of topic. And I think what is important for tonight, I'm just really going to talk through a lot of stuff and to get us into a place where you're really informed. And I think that's what is very important. Now, all of us are, like I say, some sort of relationship, if I can put it that way, with pornography. For some of you, you're actually struggling with it. And I think tonight it is a good time to start saying to yourself, listen, let's get serious about this. Let's get serious about it. For some of you, it might not be particularly issue to you, but I promise you, you are going to meet somebody that is struggling with this. And it's important that we talk through this. All right. Everyone okay with that? Everyone good? Everyone is breathing? It sounds good. Right. I'm going to just read a bit from a testimony. You can keep it on that slide. That's okay. I'm just going to read a testimony. A friend of mine, he's 30 years old now. I've been walking a road with him, and I asked him just to write down his story. And I'm sort of jumping into the middle of a story, and I'm just going to read to you what sort of happened to him. At that stage where I'm jumping into, he was 16 years old. He was obviously in school. At that stage already, he's been exposed multiple times to pornography, had some sort of sense or experience of pornography, got hooked onto it already at that age. And he says the following: I was 16 and had just completed my time at boarding school when I saw my first blue movie. But I'm generally at loss when remembering names. I can recall this film's title at a whim. Then came the internet and the love-hate relationship with internet porn. Not only was I intoxicated by the images I saw, but also by the thrill of doing something I shouldn't. I was torn between my obsession with sex and a desire to serve God. On several occasions, I attempted to stop compulsive masturbation, but I couldn't. Though I stood out in several ways, being sporty, academically and culturally strong, he's not really known for his humility. I had a poor self-image and struggled to connect with girls and have a meaningful friendship and relationship. Now, if you meet him, you wouldn't say this, by the way. I was adamant to stay a virgin until marriage and even stated that I would commit suicide should I cross the line. But ironically, I experimented with everything else. I also became increasingly curious regarding prostitutes and the adult industry and spent several afternoons after school browsing the newspapers and calling up girls. The rush was incredible. But so was the guilt and disgust. Being unsatisfied with my first experience, I justified that a professional would be better, and at the end of matric, I solicited a prostitute for oral sex. I was depressed for days afterwards. But at least I was still a virgin. As a boy, I envisioned a romance as depicting in so many books, meeting a girl in high school, being friends, and later more lovingly experience our firsts. All mine happened out of a relationship. I went to Bible school after matric and was convinced that this would help me stop my compulsive sexual behavior. Although I received some healing during this time, especially concerning the torment of my parents' four-year-long divorce, all the Bible study, fasting, prayer, and worship did not remove the hook of sexual addiction. It was in this year that I also went to a strip club for the first time. Then came university. And although I had a mentor and accountability partners and seizures of sanity, the behavior became worse over time and more risky. I viewed hours of pornography in the university computer centers. I was lonely, ashamed, and still didn't know how to connect with normal people. I didn't want to be normal. I wanted to stand out because my core belief told me that then I would be lovable. Then I would be admired, praised. My obsession with prostitute continued. And I also started going for happy endings massages. I threw away my virginity at the age 23 at a New Year's Eve party. The third woman I had sex with was a prostitute. I fell into a deep depression. I passed my degree cum laude and got a job in Cape Town. I was very lonely and didn't know how to make friends. So companions were so strange and fake. Yes, but fortunately you're in Belleville, so you're okay. All right, sorry, jokes. Got to make it. Ross set me up. All right. My behavior escalated over several years. Whenever I finished work late at night, I would go to internet cafe and so forth. I was caught out once and felt incredibly ashamed and belittled. Over 5 years, I had 2 9-month relationships and married flings in between. One of these was on and off for several months, and a girl would comment about me being in a religious phase again. I joined Shofar. I was convinced that this time I was going to get free. I did my foundations, joined a small group, and invited each of the members to my home for meals. I didn't make a single friend. I was never invited back. I struggled to relate to the music at church and the people, and found most Christians incredibly boring. Thank you. I felt that there was a message, we will love you when you pray like us, tithe like us, talk Christianese like us, and sing like us. I couldn't. I felt so different. I felt so lonely. Listen to this. So many times I would leave church and go cruising in Seaford and often pick up the escort to get drunk. Driving home, I would curse myself and contemplate suicide. I knew since reading and mentions the book, Breaking Free from Sexual Addiction and the Healing Power of Jesus, in 2005 that I was a sex addict, but I couldn't find the way out. I couldn't find people to walk the road with me, and they'd understood. So let's talk about pornography. And the first point, of course, is what is pornography? And I put on a definition there if you go to the next slide. And then after that, of Dallas Willard, and he says the following: what is pornography? It consists of writing, drawings, images, and pictures for use in arousing sexual desire. Pornography, just very simply, is whatever is used graphically to stimulate, to arouse, to give you that chemical buzz, to give you that sense of sexual arousal. Whatever is used for that is pornography. All right. So the idea of pornography is to get people to lust. And Dallas Willard mentions here, of course, Matthew 5, verse 28. And if we go to the next slide, let's actually read through that. And the two pointers I want to lift from that verse. And it says the following: you've heard the commandment that says, you must not commit adultery. But I say, anyone who looks at a woman with lust. And that, of course, is pornography. Or vice versa, ladies for men. Whoever looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out, throw it away. So it's better for you to lose one part of your body than it is for your whole body to be thrown into hell. All right, so two words that I think we should take there from Matthew 5 and really discuss just for a moment. But one word is the word lust. The other word is the word heart. The idea of pornography is to incite lust. And what is lust? Lust is brutally wanting something that you cannot have. Lust is wanting something that might be, in a certain context, a good thing. To want to have sex with your wife, that's a good thing. To want to have sex with somebody that's not your wife, that is lust. So lust is a twist, a perversion on something that is a natural and a good desire, but it promises something that it can't deliver. Lust leaves you unfulfilled because you want it. And the more you want it, the more you can't have it. So it burns, if I can put it that way. But it always leaves you in a place of never getting what you truly want. We're going to talk about that. What do you truly want? The next word that goes with it, and let me backtrack maybe. So the idea of pornography is to play on lust. To play on what you don't have. By the way, if you go back to the Ten Commandments, Old Testament, and you go and read through it, if we have to put all of the Ten Commandments into one sentence, Paul actually does that for us, and he says, do not covet. Do not covet. In other words, wanting what is not yours. Wanting what is not yours. Now that's a good question. Why do you want what is not yours? That's a weird thing. But we all have it. We all have it. It might be sexual lust. In other words, wanting something that you can't have. It might be covetousness in a material sense. Greed. Envy. Looking at another person and say, hey, you've got the looks. You've got the great. You're much taller than me. You've got more hair. All right. Envy. Coveting. Wanting what is not yours and what cannot be yours. And let me just say that for a moment. Very, very important. God, as infinitely creative as He is, creates for each one of us an infinitely interesting part. You look different from everyone else. You have a different road than everyone else. It is utterly stupid. And you can quote me on that. To want somebody else's part. Because it denies a God that is infinitely interested in you. Infinitely interesting. And infinitely works out a very interesting path for you yourself. Why walk somebody else's road? Why want somebody else's path? That is not worthwhile. I tell you what, because in the end of the day, you miss your road ahead. You miss your path. You miss what God has for you. Living somebody else's life is not a good idea. As Oscar Wilde said, be yourself. Because everyone else is already taken. All right. Be yourself. God has got a certain road for you. The second word that we find there with Matthew 5 is the word heart. The thing about pornography is that it very much plays on our identity, who we are. Let me give you two images, and I'm going to use the dragon, as symbolism for both. The first image I'm going to use comes from C.S. Lewis. I love C.S. Lewis. And I was even able to include a C.S. Lewis in this illustration on a sermon of pornography. I'm very proud of myself. Yes, that's my achievement. I like the man. All right. And he tells a story. And he says, he has a certain thought. He says, what would happen if it was actually possible to take somebody from hell and put them one day, just for a day, in heaven? How would they respond? Now, that's an interesting thought. Theologically, it's impossible, but an interesting thought nonetheless. So let's play with that thought and let's see what happens. Interesting enough, in the end, he says, his thought is that if somebody is in hell, it's because they truly want to be here. It's because they truly want to be here. All right, but leave it at that. So he goes through various scenarios. How would it play off? And one of the scenarios that plays off is a man that then goes to heaven for a day, and he struggles with sexual immorality. The way that he depicts it is that on this man's shoulder, there's a little dragon. All right. Now, an angel, when this man comes to heaven, an angel appears to this man and says to him, let me kill the dragon. Let me kill the dragon. Now, the dragon starts pulling certain tricks. The first trick that the dragon pulls is to play dead. Lies in the shoulder. Now, when it comes to sexual marriage, we all know the rules. No, it's not a problem. No, it's not an issue. No, don't worry. That's the first trick, to play dead. All right? Angel doesn't fall for that. Says, no, they can kill that thing. The second thing that the little dragon then says is, listen, he talks to the man, listen, you can't be without me. You can't be without me. You need me. Now, if we go back to the story that I read in the beginning, for this man, pornography was very much a thing of comfort. Whenever he felt alone, whenever he felt challenged, whenever he felt he couldn't cope with his environment, that is where he went back to it. In other words, in the end, the question was, could he do without pornography because he needed it? Now that's the second lie that the protagonist says. He says, you can't believe it. Now eventually in the story, C.S. Lewis, and this man assents to what the angel says and says, kill the thing. So the angel takes it, bang, steps on it, done. All right. When this little dragon then dies, it suddenly comes back to life and grows into a horse. The man jumps on a horse and there they go. All right. Weird story. I'll give you that. But the illustration holds value in the sense that your sexuality either serves you, the good horse, or it's a dragon on your shoulder. Now in the story of this man, he was conflicted. He was torn between trying to serve God. In a portion that I didn't read, he tells the story of high school where he was known as a guy, the go-to guy for porn, and he was known as a guy that you should speak to if you want to know more about Christ. He lived complete double lives, separate lives. He was utterly torn. He didn't do it on purpose. Now, the question is, who speaks harder? Does a dragon speak harder? Does your sexuality serve you for something good, for something beautiful? Or does it own you like a little dragon? Now, somebody once gives this image, and that's the second image of a dragon. When you're talking about forms of addiction, and to be sure, pornography is not necessarily addiction for a person, but allowed long enough, it will become addiction. It will become an addiction. Now, for other forms of addiction, let's talk about something like drugs, let's talk about something like alcohol. The destruction is obviously terrible, the destruction is as bad. But in general, the aim is, the first rule is, lock that thing away. Lock that thing away. If you struggle with alcohol, well, the first rule is don't drink. Don't drink. Obviously, that's not the only thing. There's many layers to it, many levels to it that one needs to work through. But the idea is you can get around in life not having to drink ever again. Not so when it comes to your sexuality. Here's the image that's given. Your sexuality, if gone wrong, if it's not serving you, if it's a dragon on your shoulder, it's like a dragon, but you put the dragon away on a lock and key. Every now and then, you have to take the dragon out, put a collar around it, walk around the house to the back. What am I trying to say with that? What I'm trying to say with that, for many people, when they struggle with something like pornography, the first thought is put it away. Put it away. Never, never go there. And that, of course, is true. The only problem is this, you have to deal with your own sexuality. Because either your sexuality owns you, or it becomes a good servant. Either it's something that leads to destruction, or it's something that leads to growth, joy. But you cannot lock it away. I was chatting to a friend of mine. He struggles with homosexuality. Almost 30 years old now as well. And he's actually come to a place where he's really honest about his struggles for the first time and says, you know what? For years, I've never spoken about sexuality. Never spoken about sexuality. Because I'm so afraid of what might go wrong. But I've realized that I don't have the identity. I don't know who I am. I walk in Cape Town and somebody says to me, come out of a closet. I go to church and somebody says to me, stay in the closet. All right. But I don't know who I am. I'm joking. Didn't say that last part. All right, but the rest is true what I say. I don't know who I am. You see, the thing about your heart is very much who you are. And pornography and a wrong use of sexuality really influences your identity because your sexuality is very much part of who you are. You can't deny it. You can't go like, I don't have any sexuality. Right? What are you? A mollusk or something? You know? Are you a flower and the bees sort of move the pollen along? What are you? Sexuality is part of who we are. You see, so the aim here, why am I going through this whole spiel and why I'm talking about all of this? The aim here is not to say to you, whatever you do, don't do it. That is not the ultimate aim. The aim here is to say, are you working towards a healthy sexuality? Are you working towards what is healthy? That's why I'm asking. Is your sexuality becoming that good horse, or is it staying the dragon that you want to put away as much as possible? Now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about stats. Let's go to the next slide. Prevalence of pornography. All right. Now, I've picked stats that comes from a secular point of view, all right, because they'll always go the most conservative route in terms of their estimations. So let's see what they found. Pornography. Next slide. 12% of websites on the internet are pornographic. 12%. That is 24 million websites. Currently. Every second, $3,000 are being spent on pornography. These are US stats. 28,000 internet users are viewing porn every second. 28,000. This is a massive industry. Huge industry. We have no idea. All right. 40 million Americans are regular visitors to porn sites. One in three porn viewers are women. That has changed, by the way. Sort of growing up, usually when people would speak to me, say, or speak to us when I was school varsity, pornography was viewed as a male-only problem. That is changing. All right? There's a new normal, if I could put it that way. We're going to come back to that word. One in three women are using porn as well. 70% of men aged 18 to 24. You guys are mostly 18 to 24. 70% of men aged 18 to 24 visit porn sites in a typical month. All right. Now, it was interesting. We obviously, in some of the congregations, talking about sex and sexuality. And it was interesting to get the feedback from small groups. We tend to discuss whatever we do on Sundays in the small groups. And many of the small groups would go back and say to us, give us feedback and say, oh, yeah, okay. It was great talking about this, but now we can move on. The reality is that pornography is far more widespread than what we imagine. It means that if you have a small group of 10 guys, you guys are mostly the girls together, the guys together in a small group. If you have 10 guys in a small group, statistically, I'm not saying that will be, but statistically speaking, 7 out of 10 would have regular contact with pornography. That's how widespread this is. All right, let's go to the next. Okay, that's a slide that cut off. The entire worldwide industry per year for pornography, $4.9 billion. To give you an indication, revenue, South Africa, gold. South Africa is the fifth largest gold producer in the world currently. Total revenue per year, $10 billion. Now, it's half of the value of gold produced per year. That is equal to what pornography makes per year. That is just to give you, that is vast industry. Per year, $5 billion. All right, 2.5 billion emails per day are pornographic. That's 8% of all emails. 25% of all search engine requests are pornographic or pornography related. That is 68 million a day. One out of four searches. All right, Google is busy. Okay, next slide. Number 10. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure to porn, either through pop-up ads, misdirected links or emails. This is a tough one. Number 11. There are 116,000 searches for child pornography every day. Next slide. 12. The average age at which a child first sees porn online is 11. 11. All right. 20% of men admit to watching porn online at work. 13% of women do. The average porn site visit lasts 6 minutes, 29 seconds. Last stat, it's not on there. The average teenager in the US watches 50 clips of porn per week. All right. So it's widespread. Can't get rid of it. Let's go to the next slide. I want to talk about the nature of pornography. The nature of pornography. And the first point that we should mention of pornography is that pornography, next slide, is addictive. Pornography is addictive. Let's go to the next slide. This is how Hilton, medical doctor, puts it. And he talks about the fact that in your brain you've got a certain center called the pleasure center. Whenever you do something that you find very pleasurable, all right, dopamine is secreted, and the brain experiences, you experience it as pleasurable. And that is a good thing, that is a normal thing, that's how the brain works. Now, Pornography thrives by overstimulation. Pornography tries to stimulate the person as much as possible visually. So that the brain secretes towards that center as much as possible dopamine. In the process, the brain actually changes. And the brain after a while starts needing that stimulation. Which means that this is then addictive. After a while, that person needs that hit, that buzz, that chemical high that pornography provides. Now, I'm not saying if you watch pornography once, you are going to be addicted to it. But what I am saying is that you're putting yourself onto a scale of moving towards that position. And the more a person watches pornography, the more the brain changes until you're in a position where you actually need that stimulation. Let's go to the next slide. So the first point is that pornography is addictive. The second point is that pornography is progressive in its addiction. Chilton puts it the following way. Let's go to the next slide. The first step of this progressive slide of pornography is, like we already mentioned, addictive. Once consumers of pornography get hooked, they keep coming back for more and more. All right. Pornography gives a viewer powerful imagery that can be recalled and elaborated on with a person's fantasy. Despite negative consequences, most addicts are unable to rid themselves of a dependence on pornography. Pornography rules their life. It reminds me of what Ravi Zacharias said. Ravi Zacharias is an apologist. He often speaks at a university setting. And, you know, students can be brutally honest sometimes. You guys look very nice. All right, so he was giving a talk. He was talking about freedom. And in the end, one soul put his hand up, and he certainly spoke quicker than what he should have spoken. And he said, "But I'm free. I watch porn and masturbate every day." Which is not really interesting. Yeah, very interesting thing to say in front of other people. And then Rabbi Zacharias said to him, "Oh, that's fantastic, but can you stop?" You see, that's actually the acid test. That's actually the acid test. If you want to ask yourself, because, listen, everyone here has been influenced by pornography some other way. I'm not saying on purpose. I'm not saying you're looking for images. I'm not saying you're going through the internet and going and looking for sites. Some of you are. Some of you are not. But if you're honest with yourself, how many naked scenes have you seen throughout your life? Not perhaps intentional, perhaps unintentional. Right? But everyone has been influenced here. Now, the acid test for a person is to ask, you know, am I actually getting to a place where I'm getting addicted to this? Actually, very simply, the question, can I stop? If you can stop, well, then stop. And don't go there. And we'll talk a bit later why. Don't go there. But if you can't stop, then you need to get honest. Then you need to get honest, because here's the thing. It's not going to stay with just struggling with it. It is actually going to progress. The second point is this, in terms of a progression. So once it's an addiction, you can't stop. Second point, next slide. Escalation. All right. The pornography consumer, similar to the drug user, requires more and more stimulation to reach his or her heights. Or highs. All right. In other words, what was enough to stimulate the person, to get that person on that high, is not enough anymore. It progresses. It escalates. The progression of this addiction. The next thing is this, number three. Next slide. Desensitization in this phase, material that is originally perceived as unthinkable, shocking, illegal, repulsive, or immoral, is now viewed as acceptable and commonplace. You see, one of the biggest, let me just put a comment on the side here, in terms of the influence of pornography on culture, there is a new normal. That is part of a huge problem with pornography. For the user, the individual user, that user gets into a place to him or her where they desensitize to what was seen as, I would never watch it, I would never go there. Now becomes normal, I would do it. It now becomes acceptable. But the same happens to our cultures. You know, what is acceptable now in terms of sexual depiction, it is terrible. You know, in fact, if you go into DSTV after 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, you've got to be quick with that remote. You've got to flip that remote and go, channel change very quickly. All right? Because a lot of the programs these days is pornography with a plot line. That's what it is. It's got an interesting plot line, but it's still pornography. If you open the papers, if you go up, the way in which relationships even work, pornography has got a vast influence. Of, there is a new normal. You see, but we need to ask ourselves, is this normal healthy? See, in the end of the day, whatever culture says or doesn't say about this, whatever culture finds acceptable or not acceptable, you're the one has to look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, am I really happy? Am I really happy? Do I really have a healthy self-view or identity, healthy relationships? That is a question you need to ask yourself. Desensitization. Then the fourth phase in this progression of pornography is this, acting out sexually. See, that's a problem with a person that thinks, you know, pornography is so private. Hey, it's on internet, it's on my smartphone, no one will ever know. That is not true. Because it changes you in the process. You become a different person. And because you become a different person, you start acting out. Another pastor friend of mine, Andre, he puts it so nicely, says, pornography is a training ground for adultery. You see, whatever you find acceptable within your heart, within your mind, in your private thoughts, it can only stay private that long. So you start acting up. So pornography is addictive, but it's also progressive. It never stays with the same imagery. It never stays at the same level. It becomes worse and worse. It becomes a scale. It becomes a spectrum into which you start falling. And again, the story of a person that I read right from the beginning, that was very much his story. The first pornographic image he saw was something very innocuous. It was a Leon Schuster movie of a lady that lifted the top. I mean, that is like, duh. You know, that doesn't seem so bad. But that's where it started. And eventually, step by step, moment by moment, it got worse and worse. Whatever he wouldn't accept as good or healthy in the beginning, you know, he speaks of his commitment to being a virgin, and yet he starts compromising more and more. To the point where prostitution became commendation. Now, you might sit here and say, hey, that's not me. That's not going to happen to me. But I'm telling you, if you expose long enough, that will become you. That will become you. Because you put yourself on a certain pathway and continued on that pathway, you will end at a certain place. You will end at a certain place. Given enough exposure, given enough time. Now, if you meet this person, this guy, that gives a story. He is a very pleasant guy. He's a highly qualified guy. He's a highly intelligent guy. He's a very interesting guy. He looks like everyone else. He's not a guy that you look at him and you go like, yo, it looks like a cat just dragged you into here. He doesn't look like that. You would never guess looking at him. And yet, this thing grew and grew and grew on him until the dragon controlled him. And not the other way around. And it's important that you say this to yourself. Pornography can never be just, harmless. It can never be, it's not that bad. It can never be that. It can never be morally neutral. Never. All right, next point. I'm rushing. Let's go for it. It reminds me of Proverbs 27 verse 20. It says, Sheol, death, and Abaddon, destruction, are never satisfied. Never satisfied are the eyes of a man. Talks about lust. Never satisfied. Never satisfied. Next slide. The nature of pornography. It's addictive. It's progressive. Pornography is an ineffective surrogate for intimacy. And this is a major point, and we need to stand still there for a moment. Mark Driscoll, if you go to the next slide, he's actually got an interesting way of putting it. He says, pornography is a tall glass of toilet water. Pornography is so effective because it's actually a surrogate for something that is good. The only problem is it's not a good surrogate. And the surrogate is this. If you go back to the story was there. If you listen to what it says in the testimony right at the beginning, the storyline all the time, the connection point all the time is, I am alone. I'm alone. And it's not a skill thing. It's not an intelligence thing. It's not a charisma thing. It's not a personality thing. And yet he felt desperately alone. Pornography, sexual immorality, is a desperate desperate surrogate for intimacy. And intimacy is just feeling close to somebody. Somebody is in my space. Somebody who really cares about me. Somebody's close to me. And we made for intimacy, and it's a good thing. In the same way like we made for drinking water. Drinking water, it's a good thing. Right? If you don't drink water, you're in trouble. Okay, medical students, that's way too basic, even for you. Alright. Water's a good thing. One thing to drink water is a good thing. But drinking toilet water? That you're not going to make a Facebook status update of, right? It's not going to be your tweet of the day. No, I have a toilet water, it tastes so good, man. It's not going to be your tweet of the day, right? It is completely ineffective for the purpose. And here's the thing of pornography. It's addictive, it's progressive, but very important. It is ineffective. For what you really want, for what you truly want, it is utterly ineffective. Pornography, sexual immorality, any form of sexual immorality will never give you what you truly want, which is intimacy. In fact, it will rob you of intimacy. The intimacy is a good thing. It's something that we should design. We're going to talk a bit about that. But pornography is completely inaccurate, completely inefficient as a surrogate for that. And the problem often with pornography and the person that uses pornography is that you get to a place where you say, chuck it. Chuck it. You get because of stresses in life, perhaps you're going through a difficult time, perhaps somebody treated you in a bad way, perhaps you're going through whatever it might be that makes you feel stressed, and then you start rationalizing and you say, chuck it. And you go to that place. The only problem is the person never walks out there feeling good. It is a terrible strategy. Because it makes you even more thirsty for what you can't have. You see, again, we have a testimony right in the beginning that I got. It's very interesting that it says whenever he went to prostitute, he would be even more depressed. He would go to church desperate for intimacy. Now, somebody else might not notice it because, hey, we're having church and we're listening to a boring guy giving a sermon, and then afterwards we're going to have coffee. Ah, that was a joke. Come on, man. Don't be so nasty to me. All right. It's not my best joke. I'll give you that. Anyway, I've had better words. Please don't remember it when you think less of me. But, you don't think of a person next to you and knowing where they are emotionally necessarily. You don't notice that necessarily. But he'll go to church, be desperately alone, go out, look for escort, look for something, look for stimulation, and then afterwards be even more depressed. Because what he wanted, he never got. Which is intimacy. Pornography can never give you intimacy. Because that fantasy that it sells can never be yours. In fact, if it could be yours, you probably wouldn't want it either. All right. So let's go on. So pornography is addictive, it's progressive, it's ineffective. And lastly, of course, pornography is sin. Now, if you go to the next slide, you'll see a picture, a depiction, a photo actually, so not a depiction, of pillar figurines. Have you ever read in the Old Testament, Asherah? Asherah? That's how it looks like. Pillar figurines. It's got a base, you'll see there, that depicted the tree of life. And obviously nudity was part of it. And these pillar figurines were found in Jerusalem. About 820 of them were found already. And they come from the stage, the era of the prophet, the literary prophet, like Isaiah and those guys, that goes nuts when they talk about idolatry. And here's the reason why. People would put that in their homes and they would worship that. And the connection with fertility goddesses like Asherah was always sexual. You'd go to a temple, you would have intercourse with a prostitute, and by having intercourse, by having sexual immorality, you incited the help of the idol to help you. Now, we might sit here and go like, fertility, that might not be my biggest issue now. I just want to actually get to university at this stage of my life. Thank you so much. So we might not understand the drive for that. But the reason why I mention that is because prostitution, spirituality, religion, throughout the ages, always has been connected. I'm talking about a false spirituality. I'm talking about false religion. In other words, pornography is never just pornography. It's not just a case of just biology. It's not just a case of mistaken relational issues, there's a spiritual connotation to it. And if you're honest with the stats and you look at the stats, you have to say to yourself that it's just too big. It's just too big. There is a demonic, there is a spiritual connotation to it. And therefore, pornography is not just a case. You know, that's what makes it so different from perhaps, say, something like alcohol, because you might be fine using alcohol. You might drink one beer, please, before the Springboks play, when they play the Pumas away, not after, all right? Because they don't play so well, but anyway. And you might be fine with it. Somebody else might not be fine with it. Somebody else might struggle with it, all right? Because alcohol, in essence, is morally neutral, unless you're predisposed to abusing it. But pornography can never be right. It can never be neutral. It is sin. All right, very important. Pornography is never innocent. It's never harmless. It's always sin. So you might sit here and go like, well, I'm not addicted. I can stop with it. Then do stop. Because it is sin. Let's go on. I'm running out of time. Let's pick up a pace. Let's wrap it here. All right, what is the result of pornography? Very briefly, let's read a verse together in Proverbs. Next slide, it says the following. Now, my sons, listen to me. Wait, let me actually put this here. Now, my sons, listen to me and don't ignore what I say. Stay away from such a woman. Talking about prostitution. In our context, pornography fits in very well. Don't even go near the door of her house, or you will give your riches to others, and your best years of your life will be given to somebody cruel. Strangers will enjoy your wealth, and what you work for so hard will go to someone else. You will groan at the end of your life when your health is gone. Then you will say, I hate it being told what to do. I will not listen to correction. I will not listen to my teachers or pay attention to my instructors. I came close to being completely ruined in front of a whole group of people. Be faithful to your own wife, just as you drink water from your own well. Don't pour your water in the streets. Don't give your life to just any woman. These things are yours alone. Shouldn't be shared with strangers. Be happy with the wife you married when you were young. She will give you joy as your fountain is. Your water. 2 points. Pornography, result of pornography. Very briefly, two things. First thing is this. Next slide. Pornography steals your strength. You will give your years. You will give what you accumulated. You will give it away. You will lose it. You will lose your strength. Now, let me especially just say a couple of things to the guys here. The essence of manhood. The essence of manhood. What it means to be a man is the ability to bring about change. That's what we live with, guys. There's nothing that kills a man quicker than just living from one salary check to the next. Living from one Monday to the next. We need more and more. We need a battle. We need something we can fight for. We need the ability. We have in that ability to change things. We want to walk into any given environment and ask ourselves, how can this change for you? We need that. The redder of the time. That's us, baby. We need it. We need to walk into a situation and bring change. But here's the thing. If you're enslaved to pornography, you don't have the strength to change anything. Your life becomes meaningless because you have no strength, no backbone to stand up for what it's like. Because you are crippled. Pornography, David, you know, the guy that stood on the roof with binoculars and other teams go to war. He checks out the ladies. And in that process, he gives up his strength. And you know what? His family loses their respect for him. If you go and follow the history after that, it is tremendous disgust. You find his own son rebels against him later on. His own son undermines him. His own son goes and sits in the back of the city and says, please, Robert, speak to me because you cannot trust my dad because he's obviously a weak ruler, but I will bring that change. We find that Absalom kills the brother that rapes the half sister. From that moment on, he gives his strength away. Whatever he's accrued, whatever he's built for, and he's a great man. He was a great man. He achieved way more than what I achieved in my biggest dreams, right? And yet, in that moment, he gives everything away. Strength and manhood. So, ladies, this might be something else, and then whatever might be appropriate here, we can talk about. But I want to say this to the guys quickly. Are you giving your strength away or not? you will wake up one day and say, my life is not meaningful. Because you don't have a backbone anymore. Do what is right and bring about change for your ship. The second thing that pornography does and sexual immorality does, very simply, is that it steals relationships. It steals relationships because it steals the ability for intimacy, and we're going to talk about that again. See, there's a new normal in terms of that. Very interesting. Let me just be very frank. Very frank. The congregation that I work with, mostly people young working, just started working, starting off with life, getting into a position of really dating seriously, getting married. The rules of dating has changed considerably. There is a new fear that creeps in with me. By the way, my wife, she walked out of that first small group, didn't notice her. Noticed her the one day going to church, and I went like, she's got beautiful eyes. Yes. So I did what any sane man would do, and I asked her for the shofar for her. You guys do that, yeah? 5 October. Yeah. Another announcement slide. No problems. All right. And at the end of the evening, I went like, So I took her hand. And she went like, what are you doing? And obviously that was a bit of an awkward moment. What are you doing? You know? So I dropped her hand. And then I went, this is worth it. Game on. What a man. What a mighty short man. I tell you what. A lot of guys today are afraid of their own shadows. Because they don't know what they want. They're too scared of being chased off. They're too scared to pursue. And listen, by no means am I the smooth mover. All right. I'm not exactly the man when it comes to romantic stuff. Rather talk to Ross. All right. Yes. But even I understand, guys, you've got to put it all out there. Game on. And you shouldn't be afraid to be hit for a six, because the next session you're bowling the Yorker. All right, you're going for it. All right, and the rules are changing because men are becoming afraid. They have inability for intimacy because it's not needed, because stimulation is replacing intimacy. You see, stimulation, you don't have to work for. You just go like, click, click. Intimacy for you, you work for. You work for it. Because you have the guts to work for it. Because you don't have acceptance rejection issues. Because you understand who you are. You understand that your life represents something that is very much worth it. And this girl is worth your attention. But she's also worth for you to go for. You know what, it's not always going to work perfectly the first time, believe me, but it makes for meaningful relationship. Stolen relationships. Pornography, if continued, will steal relationship, because it will steal your intimacy. It will steal your intimacy with God. You cannot watch pornography and worship God. You will end up in a twisted, tormented position where you desperately want to please God, so you do all the right things, but you cannot actually enter His presence. You're like the guy that's really thirsty, but you can't drink anything. It will steal your relationship with your family. You know what happens with guys? Listen, age and pornography. There's no such thing as you get older, your drive for pornography will get less. You know that idiom, dirty old man? There's a reason why that exists. Because it doesn't mean as you get older, your drive will become less. In fact, it is just as addictive, as progressive. You know how often it happens to then guys where they're still stuck in pornography, where a daughter walks in on them. A family member walks in on them. See, there's no such thing as private sin. Stolen relationships. Stolen relationships. In preparation for this, I was reading an article in Daily Mail, UK. Secular people. Wife caught the husband. She thought this guy's acting a bit strangely, so she went onto the laptop And she discovered, she thought he was cheating on her, having adultery. Didn't have adultery, but he had pornography. She confronted him and said to him, either the laptop goes or I go. So he took the laptop and he went. See, complete confusion of stimulation and intimacy, not the same thing. Not the same thing. Stolen relationships. Okay, let's go on. Next slide. Okay, I'm not going to go into that story, but it's an interesting one, believe me. Next one. Walking in freedom. Walking in freedom. All right. Sorry. I don't have a time because I want to make other points. Let's go for it. Being healed of pornography. Just keep it on that slide for a moment. Couple of things I want to say here. Very important stuff. Let me just get the right verse here. Couple of steps here that is important. First step that is really important is that you need to make, if you're struggling with pornography tonight, you need to make a choice. All right. You need to make a certain choice. Now, this choice is a very particular choice. Psalm 51. Remember, we spoke about David, the guy with binoculars. And we said the following of him as he struggled with obviously sexual immorality. Now, Psalm 51 was actually written after he got caught. Now, interesting, very well-known verses says the following, let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones that you have broken rejoice. Restore to me the joy of your salvation. Uphold me with a willing spirit. You need to make a choice tonight between stimulation or joy. Joy is that place where you look at your life and you say, I have good things. I have good things. And because of that, I'm content. Because of that, I'm in such great space. Joy. Joy you've got to work for. You need to make a choice. I read a gripping, gripping story of a pastor. I was caught in pornography, caught into strip clubs, and it progressed and progressed. Very interesting, he said what finally caught him was not the fear, but he was very afraid. He was terrified. He was terrified that his wife would catch him. He was terrified that he'd get fired. He was terrified that somebody would know and look at him and go like, Terrified, but it was not strong enough. He continued in pornography. What finally swung him around was when he looked at his life and he realized, I have no joy left. I don't enjoy anything. I don't enjoy coming to church. I don't enjoy worshiping God. I don't enjoy my relationship with my wife. I don't enjoy my family. I enjoy nothing in life. And that finally caught him because joy and the desire for joy is always much stronger than anything else. And I promise you that pornography, sexual immorality, and joy is mutually incompatible. They never belong together. And you need to make a decision for joy or a decision for easy sex, easy stimulation. That's a powerful choice, and only you can make that choice. No one else can make that choice for you. That's the first thing that needs to happen. It's not good enough to say, listen, I'm just going to put pornography on a lock and key. I'm not going to get close to it. Because you will find a way. You will find a way. Unless a couple of things happen. And the first thing that needs to happen is you need to make a decision for joy. A second thing that needs to happen, this is crucial with everyone that I deal with that struggles with sexual immorality and especially with pornography. This is a crucial point. You need to build capacity for intimacy. All of us has a great desire. We were made for intimacy, but it doesn't mean you are able to be intimate with people. You need to build the capacity to do it. Now, intimacy has got nothing to do with the amount of people you can have around you. You can have lots of people around you, have thousands of Facebook friends, be known by everyone, and still be alone. It's got nothing to do with the amount of people around you. It's how close you allow people into your space. And you need to build capacity for it. In terms of intimacy, three levels that you need to build capacity. In the first level, you need to build capacity of intimacy with God. And the way in which you do that is worship. The person that struggles with pornography needs to get to a place of worshiping God. Read the book of Psalms. Go through a psalm. Read it. Make it your own. Reflect it back to God. Listen to worship music. Worship God. Worship is intimacy with God. It's intimacy. It's emotional intimacy with God. That's why we love worship. We don't love worship because we've got smart lights and smoke lights and smoke machines and stuff falling from a roof. That's not the idea. We love worship because it's intimate. It's intimate. And you need to build the capacity. Worship doesn't come naturally to us. You need to practice it. You need to make time for it. So, capacity for intimacy with God. Capacity of intimacy with friends. Accountability, it is called. Mark Driscoll, it's not on the slides here, but I do enjoy his frankness. Listen to this, guys. Ladies, you might not appreciate this, but guys, you definitely will appreciate this. He says the following. The cold hard truth is that most guys' struggles are only known by their fellow Christian buddies. And unless Christian dudes man up. Yes, I like it. And stop arguing about stupid secondary theological issues and spend their energies. Listen, if you are in a dude small group and you arguing about stupid theological questions, this is the quote of the day for you. Stop arguing about stupid secondary theological issues and spend their energies holding one another accountable to get dominion over their underwear. Then Christian friendship is nothing more than Christian fakery. Especially for men. Ladies, please help me. I don't know. Been married for 10 years, but I still don't know. All right, so help me here. Yeah? But for men at least, friendship means a certain frankness and honesty. You believe in that person, but because you believe in that person, you're going to be straight shooter. You can be honest with that person. And you know, most of the times we get accountability wrong because what we actually want is somebody to understand. So we go like, I was so terrible. That's cool. Somebody understands. No, but that doesn't help. That doesn't help. Dudes, what you don't need is somebody going like, your mom can do that. All right. What you need is that dude to look you in the eye and say, listen, man up. Stop being Yanni Yamarhat. All right, you can do more than this. So let's do this. All right, obviously not frankness as in the get lost. All right, not frankness as in, what an idiot, you're struggling with this again. But frankness coming from a place of really believing in the potential of another person. Now, what do you want? Do you want to be treated as a pet? Because your pet you treat like shampies, doggy. Alright? Or do you be treated as a person of infinite worth and ability and capability in the kingdom of God? And somebody saying, listen, step up to the plate. Because you can do this. I believe in you. You can do this. But now you must do it. You see, that is a place of true accountability. And that's a place of true intimacy in terms of friendship. Listen, coffee dates, venting, it's overrated. It's overrated. I appreciate the value of it, but to be honest, it doesn't achieve much, usually. Because now you've vented a million things and gotten no closer to any solutions. All right, guys. You there? So intimacy. Intimacy with God through worship. Intimacy with friends through accountability. Intimacy with the opposite sex. All right. Listen. Coffee dates. Most of you. Hey, how many people here are married? Let's see the hands. All right. Listen. For the married folk, you're working for intimacy. Intimacy is something that you do not inherit. It doesn't fall in your lap. You work for it. Most of us come from Afrikaans background. You know the familiarity that creeps in. D.O.D. My ball and chain. The odong. I actually said this 3 times at a wedding after each other, separate weddings, different weddings. Every time one side of the family would crack up laughing because the bride of the bridegroom's father would be the one calling his wife, my odir. All right. The old first woman came to me and said, listen, let's just see now. When I call my wife my odir, I say it with much love. It's like, yeah, worm. All right. Familiarity creeps in. It is hard to truly intimately love one person. And you must do it because that will teach you who God is. God loves. He knows every thought, wherever I sit or wherever I stand, and He still loves me. It's called a miracle. It is hard to love one person. But you've got to work for it. Now, you might not be married, you might be dating. Dating is training ground for what will happen one day. The way you treat that girl must be how you would want to treat your wife one day. Now, obviously, with dating, there's way more boundaries. Ross can talk about those stuff. All right? Emotional, physical, spiritual boundaries, right? You don't treat the lady that you're dating as your wife, obviously. But you know what? You want one day, if that's not the lady that you're marrying, you would hardly want the guy that's going to marry her come back to you one day and say, listen, I just want to thank you how you treated my wife. Right. That's some high standards. And if you can do that, I'm not saying the relationship should, you know, inevitably end in marriage. Alright? Not the first person that you date is going to be necessarily your marital partner. But the way in which you treat that person. You can leave that person in better shape for his or her husband or wife one day. That is a mighty aim. That is a good thing. And I tell you what, it's possible. It's possible. And you know what? You will walk out there a better person because you've trained for your marriage one day. You've trained for your marriage one day. Intimacy. All right. Then lastly, lock and key. Yes, that's important as well. Let's go to the next slide. K9 web protection. Brilliant. Put it on your laptop. Put it on your phone. It really works well. Android, Apple, BlackBerry, dude, you're in the dinosaur ages, man. Sorry, Ross. All right. There's no hope for you if you've got BlackBerry still. But it works, it works, it works. All right. Listen, I don't like putting a trolley door at home because it certainly does spoil my view a bit. But I'd rather have a trolley door and laugh at the thief on the outside. But not have it and be caught in a moment of weakness. You're not going to lose anything. Put it on. Let a buddy put a password in there and then you can't cheat with it. Amazing. Then there's no avenue. If there's no avenue, the devil can't tempt you. Alright. He can't tempt you. Because you will be tempted, by the way. You will be tempted. And also, you will be tempted in marriage. Close the door. Put that trolley door on. Next one. Very nice course. Setting the captives free. You can even have it as app. Again, BlackBerry, your stuff. But if you've got Android or if you've got Apple, of course you can go on normal internet laptop and go on a course. Setting captives free. I think it's 60 days. I don't know if somebody knows it. I think it's 60 days. 40 to 60 days. And it really very well goes through the whole topic of pornography, of sexual immorality. Very helpful. Very helpful. Do it. All right. My challenge to you, the acid test, if you can stop, stop. If you can't stop, seek help. But whatever you do, don't sweep it underneath the carpet. Whatever you do, don't sweep it underneath the carpet. If you sweep it underneath the carpet, it will grow. It will grow. Don't allow it to grow. Amen. Let's stand. Let's bring ourselves before God. All right. I've got a very particular altar call for tonight. Listen very carefully to what I'm saying. We're going to pray for some people in front here. The people that I want to pray for, if you're here tonight and you say, listen, to be honest, I need capacity for intimacy. If you're coming to the front, it doesn't mean that you're struggling with pornography. Let me just make that clear before everyone checks everyone. All right? Did you see that dude? You know? That is not what the altar call is for. If we have true intimacy, pornography and the lure of pornography, gets less and less. The trick is to have true intimacy. And if you're here tonight and you're saying to yourself, listen, I actually feel quite alone. I might have a lot of friends. I might be flavor of a month on Facebook. But I feel alone. When it comes to your relationship, three areas. Your relationship with God. You're coming to church, you're going to small group, or not doing any of that. But you don't feel close to God. You don't feel close to God. You don't feel God as a presence. I'm not talking about some concept, a presence in your life. All right? If you're here tonight and somebody calls you, you are left. And you know, friendship, you struggle with friendship. Doesn't mean that there's not people around you, but friendship is an issue to you. Or maybe you're here tonight and that acceptance rejection thing when it comes to the opposite sex is an issue to you. You're so afraid you're not going to get the right one, or the right one is not going to pitch up, or you know, you don't know what to do. We're going to pray for one another. Amen. It is a crime, let me tell you. It is a crime. It is a crime. It is a crime. If you have a need in this area and you walk out here tonight without us loving you by praying with you. Amen. So let's close our eyes. I'm going to do a general prayer, and I'm going to ask everyone and anyone that needs prayer in this regard to come to the front. Father, we thank you that you made us for intimacy. We thank you that you made us to love and to be loved. We thank you that you made us like that word in the beginning of a big wave. You made us to enjoy the wave, not to be afraid of it. Not to be so distant from it that we can hardly imagine it. Not to be so afraid of it that when we put our foot in the water, we can't stand it. But you made us to enjoy life, to have true joy, to have a joy of our salvation. You made us to love utterly, utterly and unashamedly. To be naked and not ashamed in our marriage one day. You made us to love and not to hold back. And to be loved and not to be held back upon. And Lord, we must admit, of all of us, there's been stolen. There is no one here that in some sense or some measure there's not been stolen from. And tonight we ask that you will restore, as the book of Joel so beautifully says, that you will restore what the locust has eaten. What has been stolen, what has been robbed, what has been taken away. And I pray that you will fill us with your living water. We thank you that you're a good God. When we ask for living water, you don't give us toilet water. You give us fresh water. You give us good water that will last a lifetime and beyond. Lord, I pray for this congregation. I pray for every young woman and young man here. I pray for freedom. True freedom. Freedom to love, live, enjoy, to reach out to life, to grasp life and live it fully, unabandonedly. I pray that they will not be stolen. I pray that their strength will not be stolen. I pray that the relationships will not be stolen. And tonight we make a decision for joy. Make a decision for joy.